Log Talk Radio.
Everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning, this Sunday morning, January 31st, 2016. It's really a pleasure to have you with us, and I'm so excited. I know that it's been a while since we've been on the air. You might say that we took a short hiatus, and I'm so happy to be with you this evening, along with my wife, Dora. Hi, how are you, hon?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fantastic, and it's really a pleasure to have you joining us. And I'm so excited that we've had the pleasure of having a guest that has been one who's been supportive and really inspirational, and that is none other than Dr. Christopher Sawpaw. He's our featured guest this morning. Dr. Sawpaw is in the area of New York City, specifically Brooklyn, New York, in practice. He received his Bachelor of Science in material science engineering from Rutgers University and his doctorate of naturopathic medicine from Boston University and his master's in acupuncture from the New York College of Traditional Chinese Medicine. He has a lifelong dedication to healing and has worked with patients suffering from many different health conditions such as obesity, diabetes, hypertension, HIV, AIDS, and cancer. While in Seattle, Washington, prior to medical school, Dr. Sawpaw helped found a mentoring program for adolescents struggling with becoming to become conscious and positive adults. He has also worked for several years in the foster care system with troubled youth and in the pharmaceutical and biotechnology industries. He has worked for 6 years as the director of nutrition and at the Invite Health Science Center and opening up his practice here in New York City in 2005. Without any further ado, I'd like to introduce you, the listening audience, to Dr. Sawpaw. Dr. Sawpaw, are you with us?
Wonderful to be back on with you today, and I have the pleasure to also talk to Dora today, who I miss dearly. And so, yes, thank you so much for having me on.
It's a pleasure, and thank you for being with us. How's the weather out in your neck of the woods?
Not bad, not bad. We're having a lovely day so far.
Great. Yeah, well, here in Brooklyn, we are enjoying clean streets for the most part, and the weather is definitely one that's a blessing where we're not freezing, as it were.
But so they finally
again,
got all the
weather.
Snow removed, huh?
Huh?
They finally got all the snow removed, huh?
Not all of it, but at least I would say about 75-80% of it. Yes.
Good morning, Dr. Chris. It's good to hear your voice.
Good morning, Dora. Good to hear your voice, too.
Well, what I'd like to do, you know, starting our show, our first show for the year of 2016, and also with you, I really appreciate you agreeing to be our first guest for the year. I'd like to have the listening audience, especially those who are just hearing our show for the first time, if not indeed hearing you as a guest on our show for the first time, I'd like you to share with us, and perhaps you both can share, how we happen to meet one another. I know that... I can just start off by saying, prefacing by saying that you had a friend, indeed a schoolmate, who visited our home to meet with Dr. Maladomi Somme
right.
A few years back. and his name happens to be Chris as well. Am I correct?
That's correct. His name is Dr. Chris Holder. He's a naturopathic doctor and licensed acupuncturist. He practices now. He's in, I think when you met him, Baba, he was in Seattle, maybe even going to school still. But now I believe he's in Northern California. He's really bright, Caribbean, or Guyanese, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very, very, very good brother. So, yeah, he was very interested, as you know, in the teachings of Maladamo Somei, who does like a lot of, you know, African healing, African holistic spirituality for men, particularly. And you know, you were having him or hosting him at your home. If I knew that you, if I knew about that at that point, I probably would have been there too. But yeah. And so you and him got to talking, from what I understand, and he said, you know, there's this really good guy in New York City right here who I think you should connect with. And from there, we connected. I connected with Dora. And I believe Dora will probably be able to share some of her experiences with what she was going through at that time. But we began to work together, and I learned a lot from her along the way. And it, you know, my work with her actually made me a better doctor, in that a lot of the people that I was seeing at that point were coming to me for very similar issues, you know, and issues that I feel like affect our community disproportionately. And so Dora has a passion for healing and was determined to make herself healthy. And so it inspired me to become better at bringing this service or bringing this information that I had forwarded to people. So, yeah, I believe that we all three of us started working together and vibing kind of like on in the same way around spirituality, around health, around healing, and trying to raise our community. So, yeah, I really thank Chris Holder for helping me make this connection.
Yes, yes. And how is he doing, by the way? Have you heard from him recently?
I have. He's doing well. Yeah, he's a father now. He's got a beautiful little daughter.
Okay.
He's in California. He just relocated from California to Seattle, and I believe he's building his practice there. But he's doing really well. He does a lot with breast cancer and cardiovascular disease, and he uses acupuncture a lot also.
Hmm. Wonderful, wonderful. Well, when you speak with him, give him my regards, please.
I certainly will.
Thank you. Dora has a question to ask you regarding your practice.
Sure.
And I'm just...
You know, Chris, something that I kept forgetting to ask you, and I wanted to know, what made you choose to become a naturopathic doctor as opposed to, you know, practicing allopathic medicine? Because it's clear to me that you could be either one. So I'm just curious what made you choose naturopathy.
There's a few reasons. I think number one, when I was younger, in my 12 or maybe even younger than that, 8, 9, my mother became really sick. And heart disease runs in my family, as it does with a lot of people of color. And she was a single mom, kind of raising 4 kids on her own, with just lots of stress, you know, as you can imagine. And she was trying to manage all of these things by herself. And so she got sick. And we almost lost her. So she was in the hospital after having a heart attack. And after that, she began to change her life dramatically, right? So prior to that, she was, to deal with her stress, she would drink a little bit of beer at night, she would smoke, and she would work really hard and not exercise because she had 4 kids, and just eat, like, not good food, fried food, because she's from the South. It would always be, like, fried chicken and, you know, cooked vegetables, which are really, really overcooked. You know how people do from the South sometimes. And that led to her having a heart attack combined with the stress, right? And so from that, it taught me a very valuable lesson, and that it changed our lives as well as hers, and that we began to have like lifestyle changes right up front. As soon as she got out of the hospital, okay, no more fried food, no more smoking, no more drinking. And I saw how it dramatically affected her life. She got into her spirituality and things like that to help her manage her stress. And so that was my model. That was my example for the way I thought healing should happen. And, you know, it's a process. It takes time. And so I actually did. I was pursuing going to medical school. And I actually took some classes in allopathic medical school, the medical doctor way.
Mm-hmm.
But the vibe I got there wasn't what I was looking for. It wasn't what I thought a healing environment should be like. You know, I think that it was, for me anyway, my experience with it was that it was more driven by ego, that it was more driven by the need to one-up another person or the need to have to be financially successful as opposed to, you know, wanting to help people. And I feel like, you know, I don't judge people for whatever reasons they want to do whatever they want to do. But mm-hmm. I feel like for me it was just more of a calling in that way. It was something, you know, I feel like I'm the type of person where I'm not going to do stuff because it makes sense in my head. It's got to make sense in my heart. And so I really felt at that point that I need to be aligned with something that resonated with my soul. And, you know, I feel like with Western medicine, if I would have went the medical doctor route, what I had to have done was endure a lot of stuff before I got to the place where I'd be able to do the type of work that I want to do. And
yeah.
I think that with naturopathic medicine, it's been kind of like a journey to opening up in areas, you know, spiritually, emotionally, with my health, that started from day one, you know. And I think that for me, that was really important because I feel like, you know, a lot of us get into this business because, you know, they say this is about therapists, right? You know, you're the reason why you're doing it is because you're trying to heal yourself too. And so I feel like maybe in some way it allowed me to do that, you know, to really still continue this path of like healthy eating, healthy living, but growing even more from that. We're embracing like the impact of your emotions and spirit and really, really getting involved in that stuff too. And as well as like in naturopathic medical school, as well as, you know, doing all the allopathic medical work where you're studying the sciences and you're really getting into that part of it. In allopathic medical school, the other piece of the healing process that I found important wasn't there. And so that's why I kind of decided to do things the alternative route, because I feel like, you know, for the most part, I think that I was surrounded. When I got to medical school, I realized, and before that, I realized I wanted to be surrounded by people who had that same vision and wanted to go along that same path. As I did, and who weren't necessarily for the ego you know, really about something different and bringing a new kind of way to approach healing into the world as opposed to this kind of drug model, right? And so I know this is a long answer, but it's kind of, you know, I think it's a deep question for me.
I appreciate so much, Chris, your... It wasn't a long answer. It was a necessary answer because I was just curious, but then after listening to you talk, your answer will help many of our listeners because from what I find, people are still kind of like on the fence with naturopathic methods of healing. And when you describe it the way you did and when you describe the impact, you know, the impetus for you to enter the field in the first place and then the impact that it could have on so many people is amazing. I'm not going to monopolize the show, but when you were talking, I'm sitting here ready to cry because I'm going to share with, you know, I'm pretty much a private person, but based on healing and what we're talking about, sometimes people need to just say and disclose things. My mom is in the hospital right now. She's had a couple of surgeries recently. And what you said has hit home because I was telling my husband, Baba, that because of my mom's illness, now I'm on overdrive with helping people to heal mind, body, and spirit. The reason my mom is in the hospital is she had a stroke in 2000. So she's been in a nursing home, you know, for years, and the stroke was severe, so I was not able to have her come home. A few times I tried to get her to come and live with us because I feel the home environment is more conducive to healing than these places. And I've had a lot of disappointments with the hospital venue as well as the nursing home venue. And I think after going there almost every day, by the way, which was a great cause of stress for me, I would go to visit my mom every day. I did that for years until I wasn't able to do it anymore. And I had to report some of the personnel to management because it's clear that they're not there to help the patients and the residents to heal. They're just there to get a paycheck. And it was very disappointing. So I've witnessed patient abuse in the nursing home and, you know, that kind of thing. Now, fast forwarding to the hospital, mom's been in the hospital now for about 2 going on 3 weeks. First, it started off with, and of course, I'm not going to mention the hospital name because I don't want any lawsuits or anything, but it's pretty much the same all over. But you know, because when I was in the hospital with diabetes, there was a doctor that treated me terribly, and I was in the intensive care unit. And wow. He was just so mean. I know it's widespread. It's not just one facility that these things are going on. And you know, through Bob's show, some of these things need to be exposed, and people need to see there's a better way. So mom had to have a peg put in for a feeding tube because she had stopped eating. And they attributed it to her having dementia. And now as her health conditions are unfolding, we're finding out other things. Now she had to have, the colonoscopy?
Yeah, colonoscopy.
And yes. She now has a bag. They found
She's 94.
She's 94 years old, but she had to have a bag attached to her. They had to, you know, disrupt her function of her colon and put a bag. And they found a very, very huge mass, which was what was causing the problem.
Oh, boy.
And they did a biopsy. And the biopsy results, they said, were not clear, so they had to do it again. But fortunately, they found out that the mass was not malignant, but now they're trying to figure out, based on her age and everything, should they even try to remove it? And it just seems like they're just kind of making it up as they go along. While we were in the hospital, she's out of surgical ICU now, thank God, because she was there for a while, but she's out of there, and she's in a regular ward. And when we were visiting the Sunday before last, they sent in a student, and I don't know who the young lady was. It was a guy. He was a student, and they sent in a young lady with him, and I don't know what she was. She was observing because her ID card didn't say student or anything, so I don't really know what her function was there. And he was inserting an IV, and he didn't know what the heck he was doing.
Oh,
so
boy.
I said to him, "What are you doing?" And I went and I complained. I went to the nurse's station and I complained. And I'm like, "This guy is sticking my mom incessantly. I don't know what he's doing, and obviously he doesn't either. Why you allow people like this to go and work on the patients unsupervised?" And I was livid. So we got him out of there, and the nurse practitioner that was assigned to my mom saw that he should not have been trying to insert that IV in the arm that she had the stroke. Of course, that arm is compromised. Of course, you're not going to get any blood out of it. And that's just common sense without my having gone to medical school. So she used mom's leg to insert the IV. The blood came right out right away, 1, 2, 3, and it was done. And I was livid, so I complained, and I said, "Do not have anyone that doesn't know what they're doing touch my mother. I don't even want them in the room with her." So these are the things that are going on. It's not about the comfort of the patient, and especially with the elderly, you know, because a lot of them, you know, like my mom, she's unable to speak or advocate for herself. She can speak, but because of the dementia, people assume she doesn't know what she's talking about. I understand her perfectly because I've known her all my life, so she's able to communicate with me, but if someone doesn't know her, they just say, oh, she has dementia, and they'll just do whatever. So it's just like what you were saying with the naturopathic field. I see people that actually care about the patients. In the hospital, from my own personal experience and from what my mother's been going through, I don't see it there, and I'm not afraid to say that. I mean, the people that work in the hospital, they can get angry with me if they want. I don't care because I'm not speaking from theory or from what someone else is saying. I've personally experienced it, and I see it not only with my mom,
Hello?
But when I'm visiting my mom, I see other patients being mistreated also.
Hello?
Yes. Hello?
So is the connection still? It looks like the connection
no.
is... Okay, so he's probably dialing back in because something happens
yes.
with the connection.
Okay, so
but,
at this point,
yes.
Those of you who are listening, we've lost contact with Dr. Sotfor, and I imagine that he's trying to call back, and it's very apropos at this point to take a time break, and we will be back with you shortly. So please stay tuned. Thank you, and we will continue shortly. And I see that Dr. Sotfor is with us. We had a little technical difficulty. Dr. Sotfor, are you with us?
I am. I mean, I'm back.
Wonderful. Yes. Well, indeed, Dorit has shared with us her sentiments about our mother being a patient in a hospital here in our community. And one of the things that I just wanted to preface before you respond to what she shared with you, was that there is this new culture that's attempting to be generated within the hospital community, and that is to improve the bedside manner, to also be cognizant of the fact that they're dealing with patients from different ethnicities and cultures and sensitivities. So I'm optimistic that that will eventually create a groundswell of change within the allopathic community. But again, of course, we're very much an advocate of the naturopathic journey, as it were, which is what you're involved in. So without any further digression, what are your thoughts about what Dora shared with you?
It's very emotional for me. It makes me angry. You know, I think we could dedicate a whole show on this and the mistreatment of people in hospitals, but I think in the medical system. But I think it kind of brings up Margaret Washington's book, right, with medical apartheid, where she talks about how the medical system historically has treated people of African descent. And whenever I hear stories like this, a lot of times I can't help my mind from going to that. Like, do people who, are in hospitals, like, in white communities, do they get treated the same? Is it across the board? It's disgusting to hear these things, how folks are treated. In fact, recently I went into the hospital for something involving my daughter, because when we first got our health insurance, we had a state-funded kind of health insurance and things like that. So we got we got really friendly with one of the doctors that was there who we thought was a really good pediatrician. And so the people who go to the particular clinic that we go to is a more like low-income clinic. It's more like a low-income clinic, so the people who go there are more like low-income. And so we just like the doctor because we think that she's great. And but when we go in there, it's like all of these assumptions are made and all of these kind of ways that we're being treated that I feel like people are being treated this way because they already know that you don't have money and that you're a person of color and things like that. And so I think it just brings up a lot for me when she goes through this. It's way beyond like naturopathic medicine versus allopathic medicine or the naturopathic way versus the allopathic way. When she's talking about the way human beings are treated and treated differently for me when she talks about that also. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that lots of people can identify with that particular experience. And I feel like if she, you know, if you were wealthy and white, do you get treated that way? So, I mean, mm-hmm. I think that that's what it brings up for me. In addition, I mean, I just think that it's a failing of the medical system. You know, I think that they're overtaxed, they're overburdened. I think that they believe that they don't get paid as much or as well. And so I feel like people don't get the best care, don't get the best treatment. Mm-hmm. I think it's a difficult system to fix because it's so, you know, heavy, bureaucracy-wise, it's just so heavy. And I think that, again, I feel like there's lots of people, as Dora said, that they get into it because it's a paycheck and they get, you know, and if they're feeling like they're not getting compensated well with insurance and these types of things, you have medical doctors that don't even really give a damn, don't care. Mm-hmm. Because to them, in order to make their bottom line, they got to see, 12 patients an hour or, you know, one patient every 6 minutes or something like that. And most of the time, you don't even see the doctor. You go see the nurse or the physician's assistant. But that's the way the system's designed,
right? You know?
So it's not anybody's. I don't think that it's anybody's fault per se. I feel like people kind of fall into bad habits, but it's the way I feel like the system's designed. You know, people at the top and medical doctors feel like they're not being compensated well anymore, and so they begin to stretch and they begin to kind of like push and see more patients so that the more patients they see, the more money they can get, and they're not getting paid per patient as much from insurance. And so again, that is an impetus to see a lot more patients and just be busy and just hurry up, and you're rushing everybody along. And so there's this system that's being created that is very much driven by the dollar. You know, so yeah, you're going to have someone who doesn't know what they're doing drawing blood because the there's very few people who because the qualified people are probably seeing like 7 or 8 people already, and so they just throw someone in there for her who doesn't know what they're doing. And so I think that this is also, to me, it brings up issues of universal health care. Versus private healthcare, and what that will do to the system once if we do go to like a single payer system, and I think that people who are wealthy have been kind of saying they don't want a single payer system because they know that all of their healthcare just in general is going to be what Dora's mom experienced, kind of like the subpar healthcare. Whereas I think that people on the other hand are saying, well, if we just work together to increase the standards of all healthcare, then all people will be served. And so I feel like there's issues around that, too, that bring it up for me. And so, yeah, it makes me angry. I think it's a political conversation we're having now, and it's very much something that I feel like I'm very emotionally connected to. It just brings up so much for me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm very much into, I'm very angry about it, but then I have to put my anger to the side because my being angry isn't good for my health or anyone's health, but especially if you know, if you've had diabetes, last thing you need is stress and anger in your life. But I'm a firm believer in don't get mad, get even.
And
the way that I believe that we can get even with this system, because I could go very political with this, even on down to the prescription medication, just give everybody medication, you know, keep them barely alive and we'll get rich off of them. And that's a whole nother show in itself.
So my way
of getting even is promoting naturopathy, because once people catch on to what you do for a living, Chris, they will run out of those hospitals. I say, there was an old expression, my family is from the islands of Barbados, and my father used to have this expression, hit them in their pocketbook, you know? and I think it sounds funny, that's really great, but it's true, because once they start pulling out of that medical system, hit them right in the pocketbook, don't use that prescription medication, it's going to kill you and it's going to cause something else to go wrong. You know, like just get out of that system and go to the naturopathic doctors. If anyone has a question as to whether or not it works, they can ask me. Because I know that if I had stayed on that insulin and glucoside and all that other stuff that they were, I'd have been dead probably 3 or 4 years ago, you know, or maybe, you know, maybe quicker than that. Because that medicine made me feel like I was going crazy. It made me feel like I was losing my mind. Yes, I had wonderful numbers when I checked my fasting glucose number. Yeah, that was great. But I had heart palpitations. I was probably one step away from a heart attack and didn't know it until I read the warnings on the packages. And I'm like, oh, my God, this thing can kill you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's so much. So I say hit them in their pocketbook on the political side, and then on a mind, body, spirit, on a personal humanitarian side, have your, you know, for yourself, and this is to the listeners, for yourself, do it for yourselves, your family, your friends, and your associates. Try a naturopathic doctor. First of all, you've got absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. And I always say, don't go by what somebody else says. Check it out for yourself. And I'm almost willing to bet dollars to donuts. Well, donuts, right? I'm diabetic. I'm talking about donuts. But I'm willing to bet dollars to donuts that you will be satisfied when you start having your health care done by a naturopathic doctor. Your children will feel better. You won't have these side effects from the medication. You won't be nauseous. Your body won't swell up. I'm talking about diabetes medicine right now, but I know other of a medication has the same similar side effects. You won't get the heart palpitations. When I was on insulin, the first time I injected myself, my right leg swelled up like a balloon. I said, oh, shoot, what the heck? And I met a young man that works at one of the companies that my agency deals with. He was considerably younger than me. He was in his early 30s. He had told me he had to quit his job because he was diabetic. They gave him insulin. And he had, I don't know what you call that condition of the legs. When both legs swell up, they look like tree trunks.
It's gout, I believe.
Okay. Well, his
legs. Is
that
gout, Dr. Sokol?
Maybe edema or Yeah, maybe some kind of edema. Or if it was an infection, it could have been some kind of cellulitis. But I think if both legs are swelling up, you can just say he's got some edema.
Right.
And his whole body in general, because he said to me, Miss Gray, I was never this size before. This this just happened after, you know, doing the insulin. And he said that, you know, it started getting painful for him to walk, and he said that he had to quit his job. And I really felt for him because I met him. I guess we always talk about, you know, being into mind, body, spirit. I'm very much into law of attraction and spiritual principles, and I believe that I met him as a result of law of attraction, because what's the probability or even the possibility that I would meet someone who would tell me that story not 2 months after I had been prescribed insulin and was having those problems? So I said, oh, my God, and he was so much younger than me, and I felt for him because he had just gotten married, and he said he has to quit his job because using the insulin and having to travel back and forth to go to work, he said it was too much for him. And we're talking about a man in his early 30s. So that's one of the stories, but people, you know, People need to call into the show, tell their stories. They need to talk with one another, talk to their neighbors, talk to their friends. If you have a medical condition, it's not a stigma. So it's better to talk to people and let people know what's going on with you so that you can help the community in general.
Absolutely.
But can I add something?
I'm monopolizing, so I'm done.
I just want to add something real quick, and I think you said a lot of very important things. I think one of them is that oftentimes when people they get this advice, they have a condition and they're prescribed a medical, like a drug, and then they're on the drug and they're feeling poorly and they feel like if they go back to the doctor, doctor's just going to say, well, I'm just going to decrease the dose, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and I'm going to give you another drug. And they keep going through this whole thing where they're on this medication that's making them feel bad, they get put on another one that's making them feel bad, and they get put on another one that's making them feel bad, and I feel like that's why I feel like my work is really, really important. I see a lot of people who are in that vicious cycle. I don't pull people off their medications, but I think a lot of times what happens to people is that they're waiting and waiting for their medical doctor to make some changes, and they have very, very few options. So what I tend to do is I say, well, okay, I can't tell you to get off your medication, but here's what we can do to help you manage the side effects and help you manage your overall condition while you're on this medication. We can get you better. We can really, really work to get you better, and we create a relationship around getting the person better, because I feel like that's another thing. When a person is trying to heal themselves, you got to kind of, you know, to me, as a provider, what I always like to tell people is, you know, I'm not here to give you a medication and send you on your way and never talk to you again and forget about you. This is about you getting better, and I don't expect that you're going to get better overnight. So you got to connect with me. You got to call me. We got to talk. We have to have conversations. If you're not doing well, even with the supplements I have people on, if they're not doing well, listen, let me know so that we can make some adjustments along the way so that you're not having any side effects. And I think that that's what you don't get when you're in this medical system, right? And I think that this is what we're alluding to. A lot of times medical doctors just don't have time for that.
Yes.
And you're a body and a number, right? Where I think that this healing journey is very, very personal. We all experience, and Doria, you know, you could talk to this because you work with lots of people who have blood sugar issues. You all don't have the same journey, but you can definitely help someone along their way, right?
Yeah,
and absolutely. That your experiences with diabetes are all different. Like, you didn't have that level of edema that young man had, but you certainly can be there to tell him and give him some advice. And so I think that those types of things aren't, I mean, that's what healing's about, right? But you don't get those types of things in this medical system, and that's what its failing is.
I agree. And I know I said I was going to stop talking, but I just wanted to have one final thing.
No, please. I love to hear you talk.
Okay, thank you. Well, as far as allopathic medicine is concerned, I'm not suggesting that no one use allopathic prescription medication. And the reason I say that is I have great respect for insulin, because if they didn't fill me up with that insulin when they took me to intensive care, I would have died. So I'm not saying don't use it. Everything has a value. All I'm saying is those types of things are not meant to be life sentences.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying, because it's clear
exactly.
to me. I was gone. I had one foot in the grave, Dr. Saltpaw, before you met me. I had one foot in the grave, and I'll never forget the date because it was December 23rd, 2009. That is the day that I almost died. Oh, my numbers had gone. My numbers had exceeded 1,000, and the people, this I can say because I'm not talking badly about them, but they had taken me to Litch. And the doctor said, I don't even know how you're still alive. How are you here? Because they said that my numbers had gone so high that they weren't able to measure them, that all they know is that it was over 1,000. How much over 1,000, they didn't know.
Right.
So that's the thing. So I would have died if I did not get insulin that day. So I'm not telling, I don't want to give a wrong message about prescription medication. It has value. But I know that it's not meant to be a life sentence. And I also know that the cause, and you know, unfortunately with type 1 diabetics, It's different, but I do know that with proper care with a naturopathic doctor, even people that need insulin to live because they were born with that deficiency, that's a different story altogether, but their medication doses can still be decreased. That I know.
That's true.
So,
that's true.
So I'm just saying, yeah, I respect prescription medication because I'm still alive because of it, but the cause is the cure, and if you stop doing the things that caused you to become ill in the first place, your body can heal itself. And that's when I talk a lot about mind-body-spirit approach, because you need a balance between
right.
the three. You can't live a stressful life. You can't overlook things like meditation, listening to your body. You can't overlook those things and heal.
Right. And I just have to second that, Dora, something that you said about the medications and that they're not a life sentence. I think that that's so profound, and that I feel like a lot of times when people get these chronic conditions, they're saying, well, you know, they're led to believe, okay, well, this is it for you. You've got to be on this for the rest of your life, right? There's no other conversation about how diet impacts that, you know, how emotions impact your condition, how exercising impacts your condition. You can change your body through exercise. They don't even get, you know, they don't even get that kind of conversation. And so yeah. I see a lot of those people who come to me and they're like, well, I've been on this medication. It's making me feel horrible. I don't have any options. I'm like, yes, you do. There are other things that you can do. And mm-hmm. we can make it so that you may not have to take this so much or be off of it completely. Again, mm-hmm. that's a healing. That's the healing road. That's a process. We can't do that work overnight. And so I do think that working with a naturopath is a bit of a commitment. And that I feel like it's easier to commit to just picking up a pill every once in a while. But working with a naturopath, we're going to be asking you to make these kind of dramatic lifestyle changes, not overnight, but in time. And that's how you're going to get better.
And that time factor is important because many people are afraid, because many people are aware that if they work with a naturopath, they're going to have to change things, and many people don't want to change. My prayer and my mission is to assist people with that journey so that it can to try to help take the fear out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I threw away, well, my husband and I literally threw everything out of our refrigerator and our cupboards when we found out that my diabetes was caused simply, you know, by the diet, eating the wrong things, the diet, the stress. But most people don't want to change. It's like asking someone mm-hmm. It's like asking someone to stop smoking cigarettes today or you will die from some type of cancer. Now, as an ex-smoker, okay, I can understand the fear. I smoked cigarettes for, oh, God, maybe about 20 years. The last cigarette I smoked was March of 1990, and I've never looked back. But that was a process because I tried all sorts of things, including hypnosis twice, which didn't work. Okay,
wow.
So I understand the difficulty in changing a lifestyle, and that's what keeps people away from naturopaths. So I'm just really here to, you know, everyone in the listening audience, please don't be afraid and don't think that you have to do what I did. See, I didn't want to die. So I was willing to throw out everything in my refrigerator and change my lifestyle immediately because I didn't want to die. But my prayer is that before someone comes down with a deadly disease, maybe something I can say might help them. And then you'll start seeing a naturopathic doctor because prevention is really what will keep us out of these hospitals. Prevention. But you can't do prevention if you grew up and say, a family where you ate the chicken and the macaroni and cheese and the oxtail, like we had the oxtail and a lot of sweets and all that kind of stuff, and it tastes delicious, but it'll kill you, if not now, in the long run. You
right.
don't want to be in the hospital as an elderly person or a person of any age, but I'm thinking of my mom right now, who, if it wasn't for her diet, I am clear, she would not have had to have a feeding peg and a bag and all these things. But it's that West Indian diet. The food is delicious, okay? But it's not the best thing for you.
Right.
So a lot of these things that they say are genetic, it's not genetic. They say we have a predisposition for something. No, we don't. All we're doing is learned behavior, and that behavior we have, you know, as adults, we have to be willing to say what we learn is wrong. It's not a place in a blame or anything. It's coming to a realization that to help yourself, you just might need to change.
I think that this is a perfect segue for our you know, New Year's resolutions talk that we were talking about and having a trying to help people struggle with their struggling with their New Year's resolutions, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was just thinking in terms of a thought about these holidays. One is inclined to go to certain parties and to over consume things that are not really healthy, but we use an excuse, and of course there's a little peer pressure involved with, like, you know, you're going to come to the party, right? And we made this big cake and all this food, and we can't throw this away. And as a matter of fact, whatever is left over, you can take home with you.
Right.
So, and then we have the other aspect of the post-traumatic slave syndrome by Dr. Joy DeGruy, which, you know, gets into, that's a whole other show. But just to touch upon the fact that indeed our diet, especially those of us from the South, we have continued the unhealthy diet as a result of us being descendants of slaves going back some 400 years ago.
Right.
And our diet consists of the remnants of this so-called slave master that he left, you know, for us to eat in the field, as it were.
Right.
And then we've considered that to be norm at this point, like Dora was mentioning about ham hocks and, you know,
oxtails
and so forth, you know, very delicious and spiced up.
Yes.
But indeed, over a long time, you know, exponentially over a long period of time, the body begins to suffer. It keeps score, as it was what we say in the running community. So I'm really, you know, excited about you being on board again with us and having these discussions so that the listening audience can become proactive and become more critical thinkers in terms of how their life's journey is as a result of the diet in which they have embraced. So yes, let's get into this New Year's resolution health initiative.
Yeah. I think with you know, with the work that we do, This is where all the work is, right? It's like making that commitment and waking up every day and doing it. And so, and the way I work is as a naturopath, you know, you see me for a visit, I write you out a plan, and that sets the direction, and then we check in with visits, and I can give you encouragement and things like that. But all the work is yours. Like when I worked with Dora, this is our conversation all the time. Listen, I'm going to give you this information, but this is all your work. And Dora was great, did all of the work, did everything. Most people don't. That's the difference, right? And so, and I think that this whole New Year's resolution thing, in a larger sense, is about that. It's about, like, committing to this healing journey and how do you effectively do that? You know, what allows you to get up every morning and be strong enough to do the things that you know that are going to make you healthy? Where, and as soon as you step out your house, you know, you got McDonald's on the corner, you got Dunkin' Donuts, you go to work, and your coworker brings in a box of donuts because they're trying to be nice. I mean, this is stuff that people that people have to go through every day. But how do you discipline yourself enough to get this done? I think Dora can really speak to that because she's actually had to go through that. But just a few things that I usually try to stress to people is that, like, when they're setting these types of goals, they just really need to be very realistic, as real as they can. For instance, resolving never to eat your favorite food again is setting yourself up for failure, right? And so if you do like oxtail every once in a while, you know, maybe you can say, okay, you can strive to have oxtail once a month, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's a good start. And then eventually you'll know that you'll probably, you know, after a few months, you'll probably skip a couple of months, and then it becomes like 3 months since you had the oxtail, right? So you got to be realistic. You got to set realistic goals. You got to set attainable goals in the very beginning. I think planning ahead is really, really essential, right? And so you don't want to wait to the last minute to decide, okay, well, now I'm going to change my diet tomorrow, and you still got, you know, Dunkin' Donuts, Frosted Flakes, fried chicken, Kentucky Fried Chicken in your refrigerator. That's tough, you know? So I think you have to plan ahead. Like Dora stated, when she was diagnosed, you guys went, cleaned out the cupboards, cleaned out the refrigerator, stocked your pantry with good foods, put good foods in your pantry. You planned out how, you know when you were going to get to the healthiest supermarket you can get to, where you can get your organic produce, things like that. You took the time before getting into this kind of routine to plan it out. It's so important. And, you know, you actually want to outline your plan. You want to make sure that you have your plan, like, written down, and that you can, like, look at it. You can visualize it. You want to have people in your community or around you, your husband, your family, who also can see your plan. And you have to be really open about what's going on, right? And so when, like, for instance, I always think about the guys who, you know, I go to the gym a lot, and I always think about the people who say to me when they haven't seen me in a while, like, wow, you know, I haven't seen you in a while. What's been going on? That's really important. It's really important to help someone to stay on their plan. And so allowing people to know that this is something that you are doing, that this is something that you're trying to accomplish, having a partner along the way. When Dora was going through this, I imagine she needed to kind of, like, get you on board with what she's trying to do, Baba. And so that's really important. It's important to outline it. To me, it's important to let people know, you know, talk about it. Don't be ashamed of it, you know. You got to make a pros and cons list, I think. And so you want to, talk about your benefits and risks, like what will you benefit from doing this versus what you're going to lose. And I guarantee that the benefits stack up. Again, you want to talk about it. You want to tell your family. You want to tell your friends. And I think that reward is essential also, right? The other part of it is that, you know, if you are, for instance, struggling with diabetes and you decide that you want to lose some weight, you create healthy rewards for yourself, whereas, you know, a reward wouldn't be, okay, well, I'm going to allow myself to have donuts for just one day. You can say, well, what I'm going to do is, because I'm really exercising consistently and I'm doing this thing, I'm going to buy myself a new pair of sneakers, you know? So you can reward yourself that way. And so if you feel like you're being consistent in the gym, you create a positive reward around that, and you say, well, okay, I'm going to get myself a new tracksuit, you know? Or I'm going to maybe compete in some, like, little race that costs money, or I'm going to go someplace to someplace warm to run. So you create rewards around the accomplishments that you've made. You want to track your progress and make it visual, right? And so you want to have ways that you can look at your weight loss, ways that you can track your blood sugar, for instance, right? And if you fail, don't beat yourself up, and have positive people around you who are going to help to pick you up, right? And so I think that sometimes it's hard to not get down on ourselves. But again, this is all part of the process. I feel like I've said this many times. I think that whenever I give someone an instruction, I think that the norm is that people do about 50% of what you tell them to do. And so there's, you know, there's that much of an opportunity to beat yourself up. And I always tell them, like, listen, you're gonna fail at this, but you got to keep trying. And when you do fail, don't beat yourself up. You just got to kind of use that as a lesson and kind of just push through it and move on and make the right decisions the next time. You just got to keep trying. And so those are the things that I feel like would help, you know. Again, I feel like focusing on having people around you to help you through it, and talking about it, letting people know, is really, really key and essential. And planning early, and you know, making lists and having visuals.
Hmm. Yes, that's very profound. The visuals and making a list, and the peer pressure, positive peer pressure.
Right.
I like that. You know, I just want to share with you a story of a person that Dora and I met at a walk in Prospect Park, Brooklyn, New York, a walk for cancer, I think it was.
The breast cancer walk.
And this brother we met, and I had the pleasure of walking with him. I think Dora and I had lost contact with one another in the walk. And I'm walking with Damien. His name is Damien, Garganius,
I believe.
Damien Garganius, I believe. You can Google his name, but he was on The Biggest Loser for
The Biggest Loser.
For quite a while, for a few shows, because he was losing weight, and he happened to also have met a young lady who eventually became his wife on the show. He met her. And the point I wanted to make was that as I was walking with Damien and talking to him about Dora's plight with diabetes and the fact that she was recovering from it, he made a statement that was so profound and it resonated with us even up until the day, that we're all 1 mil away from diabetes.
Mm.
That many of us have diabetes, at least,
type 2
diabetes,
yes,
but are not aware of it. And if we are not eating healthy, that we could succumb to being inflicted with this disease of diabetes at a moment's notice.
It's true. I believe the Center for Disease Control has statistics. I think there's around 5 million people or so who are what they call pre-diabetic, and they don't know it.
Yes.
Right.
So I'm saying all this to say that the show is about the New Year resolution, health orientation for 2016, that many of us, unbeknowing, have perhaps subjected ourselves to being at risk, and that risk being exacerbated by us celebrating the holidays, such as, you know, a New Year's Eve party or a Christmas party or any type of, you know, gathering for whatever celebration. And I'd like you to share your thoughts on that, Chris, in terms of Damien's
statement.
The statement that he made. And I may add also that, unfortunately, he's no longer with us. A year ago, he passed. I don't know what the circumstances were, but each of us has a purpose, as it were, in terms of our life's journey. And he served his journey. His life was well served. And, of course, just that bit of information has made a tremendous difference in our life. I've been a vegetarian for more than 26 years, and Dora has been a vegetarian for going on 8 years. But we found out, I mean, I was a vegetarian. I was still drinking sodas. And even thinking, well, I'm not drinking a Pepsi, but I'm drinking a ginger ale, so that's not too bad. And I'm trying to convince myself the fact that it has ginger in it, there's some redeeming attributes to the soda, which was not, you know, not the case in terms of the sugar content.
So with Damien, I'm sorry, I just wanted to mention, and I'll never forget him, because he gave me a DVD, which I still have, and
yes,
I watch occasionally,
yes,
and the DVD tells you how to reverse diabetes in 30 days.
Yes.
Yes. And that's something that the listening audience can email us, give us a call, and we'd be more than happy to share with you the information about that DVD. As a matter of fact, the next time you're on the show, Dr. Saltzman, perhaps we can even discuss the content of that DVD, because I'll send information to you about it, and then we can have that discussion.
I'll get the link, because I believe
it's
on YouTube now.
Yes,
so
exactly.
I'll get the link so that we can put the link on your website and people can watch it.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that's another conversation about the internet. I'll discuss that point with you later on in the show. But what were we talking about again?
About his statement that you're 1 meal away.
Right.
Right.
So I do think that that is a good mindset to adopt for everyone, because I think in reality what he's saying is that everyone is at risk, and we mm-hmm. see, you know, everyone is at risk. I mean, I know people who are marathon runners that are diabetic, people who are thin and muscular who are diabetic, people who, mm-hmm. you know, and so diabetes doesn't necessarily look like the overweight person that's sitting next to you, that's shoving like donuts down their mouth. It could be someone who looks otherwise pretty healthy. It's really shocking to me how much I'm seeing even more in my practice, where people are telling me, yeah, you know, I've got this little, my doctor says I got this little issue with my blood sugar. You know, and it's a 35-year-old woman that's 120 pounds and like 5'7". And you're thinking to yourself, like, how can this be? You know, you look so healthy. But in reality, I think that there are a lot of things going on that are making this more prevalent. I think that the quality of our food, the toxins in our environment,
stress.
The stresses in our lives, all of these things are impacting us a lot more profoundly, that are setting people up for having much more of this. So I believe that he's right. We're even seeing that more diabetes in young populations of people. The fastest growing group, I feel like, are children, right? We're seeing
mm-hmm.
it with children now. And so, you know, I do, that does resonate with me deeply. In fact, one of the things that I've been looking into in my practice, and I believe that I'm set up for doing come March, is doing a diabetes screening, a pre-diabetes screening through your urine. And the reason why this is important is because, obvious, right, is that we need to kind of figure this stuff out before it's too late, before you go to your doctor and you're fully diagnosed, even before they tell you, well, you're pre-diabetes, right? And so there are ways that you can monitor someone's insulin patterns, or the way that their body secretes insulin, very early, and it can give you signs that there is something going on. So what happens is that when you have a piece of food or meal, your body, it creates glucose in your body, and then your body secretes insulin so that it can bring it into your body. It can kind of put it in your muscles. It can store it in your liver and things like that. And so the first signs of losing the ability to do that is when your body begins to respond differently when insulin, if you're making too much of it, for instance. And so you're becoming less and less sensitive to it. The areas that the glucose is supposed to be stored is becoming less and less sensitive to it. So now that there are ways to detect this really, really early on, and I feel like it's something that's really important for people to look at who've got family history of diabetes, who are of certain ethnic descents, and that I feel like you see a lot more of it in people of color, Asian people also, Latino people. And so I feel like once you have that information, then earlier you catch it, the easier it is to correct. As you know, Dora, like when you're far gone into the whole diabetes process, you don't want to wait. It's so much more work if you wait to the very end, where now you got to be on insulin because your pancreas is already burned out.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a place where you can get with this condition where it's the point of no return. That's why I think that it's very, very important to detect these things early and to adapt this mindset that this gentleman had, where it's like, listen, we're all one meal away. So it's like saying, listen, you can't be eating this type of food anymore. No one can.
Yeah.
You know, no one can be eating like this highly processed food and, you know, drinking sodas all the time and thinking that you can do this regularly. You have to approach it like, listen, you're one meal away. It doesn't matter
mm-hmm.
who you are. It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete. It doesn't matter if you're a mm-hmm. child. It's taking everybody out. So we kind of need to have this approach with it. We need to develop more better techniques of screening this early and just putting it in like a standard kind of, you know, your standard medical you know, analysis shouldn't always include that. You know, you got your glucose levels there, but they don't check the other stuff that's more like early screening, early warning. You know, once your glucose levels start to slip up, that's what they normally test for. And once that starts to increase, it's almost you're too late. That's the problem with a lot of the testing that we're doing now, in that it's not early screening. You know, once it's high, it's already too late, you know.
Yeah.
And so the levels that they set for diagnosing you with diabetes, it's like if it's over 120 or something like that, and if it happens twice, then they just diagnose you with diabetes. But what happens all the time before that? You know, it takes you years to get there, and there's really no way in medicine right now where we can kind of, you know, consistently check for this, even in our children. And so this is one of the things I'm beginning to implement more in my practice, is kind of trying to do like an early warning thing. And, you know, if you see that insulin level begin to become and act erratically, then we can say, okay, you got to stop this. That gives you motivation to stop this. But again, adapting this mentality, like, listen, you're one meal away. We just need to be having healthy diets. Period.
Mm-hmm.
End of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. I'd like to tell the listening audience that if you would like to call in and share your thoughts with Dr. Sawkpaul and myself and Dora, please call in at 646-716-7935. Again, that's 646-716-7935, and push the number 1 button on your phone, and that would indicate that you're raising your hand and you'd like to speak. Thank you. Before we go any further, Chris, I'd like you to share what type of services you provide, and also how does one get in contact with you and where you practice?
Right. So I practice in a few different places. I feel like I'm all over the place. I have an office in Peekskill. I'm here on Mondays at 810 South Street in Peekskill, New York. Again, I'm there on Mondays. I'm at in Manhattan, 230 West 13th Street, Suite B. I'm there on Sundays and Wednesdays. I'm in Brooklyn at 255 Eastern Parkway, Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I practice 5 days a week and in 3 different places. You can call me at 917-837-6722. But it's better if you email me, and that's at drsawpaw@gmail.com. And so it's just Dr. D-R. SALTPAW@gmail.com. And what I do in my practice is naturopathic medicine. A lot of times I work with people who have these chronic conditions and they need a second voice. They need a second opinion. They need someone to help to put them on a path of getting away from their medications, of really working on getting healthy, of addressing the core issues. And a lot of times the patients are doing well on their medications, but they're like, listen, I just don't want to be doing this for the rest of my life. What can I do to put things in place to help me be drug-free? You know, how do we make this happen? And so we work together to get the person to that place. And mm-hmm. so that's the type of work that I do. I do acupuncture. I do this using acupuncture, herbs, nutritional supplementation, dietary changes, exercise advice. I use homeopathic remedies, which kind of work more on mental, emotional, spiritual, energetic plane, because I feel like healing needs to happen there also. And body work, so like Tui Na, which is Chinese massage, again, acupuncture. And so these are all modalities that I use to help people. I do a diet, a regular diet. So I've got a diet that I work with that's called Ultralight that I think is very, very effective. And so I run this diet program. I also run a detoxification program that I think really helps people. So it's a lot of things that we're doing in the practice, and we're growing more because I've now got the ability to work a little bit more free, because I'm working with some medical doctors, and we're going to be doing some alternative testing, like I mentioned. We're going to be doing some of the early glucose or early blood sugar issue stuff with urine testing of that, and we're going to be offering a lot more services there.
Mm-hmm. What are your fees?
My first office coffee is in Manhattan. It's a little bit different than it is in Peekskill. So Manhattan is the first office coffee is $2.25. Follow-ups are $100. If it's naturopathic medicine, if it's acupuncture, the first office coffee is $125. Follow-ups are $100. I do sliding scale. So I do a sliding scale. So if a person has financial issues, we can always work things out. I offer packages oftentimes. So if a person finds it difficult to commit to continuous visits, we can package a deal and you can get less for each visit, or payment plans are also available. So I've always worked with people. I also accept health insurance. And so a lot of my patients are just using their health insurance to see me as an acupuncturist. Some health insurances pay for acupuncture. So as long as the person is getting some acupuncture, a lot of times we're able to accept their insurance.
Wonderful, wonderful. Another question, do you make house calls?
Yeah, I do. I have in the past, and I certainly am willing to make house calls. The fee is usually a little bit more to pay for travel and time, but I'm certainly willing to do that.
Great, great. Well, Dora just responded with a very positive grin when you mentioned that you accept insurance.
Yes, because, well, I was going to speak with you off the broadcast about it, but I'll mention something that we had talked about, that I'd like to invite you to speak at my place of business. And when you just mentioned that you accept health insurance for acupuncture, I felt like saying yippee, you know?
Absolutely. I would love to speak there.
Wonderful.
But after the broadcast, I'll talk to you about it, because it happens, the time that I have for the forum, it happens to be on one of the days that you are in Brooklyn. So that's awesome.
Yeah, hey, that's great. Absolutely.
Yeah, Dora constantly amazes me, and I'm so proud of what she's doing in terms of her advocacy for health, not only within our family, but within the circle of her professional environment. And I may mention that she's a life coach. So, Dora, would you like to share with the listening audience about your new addition to your services?
Surely. I'm a certified life coach now. It's something that I had been working on for about a year. And life coaching, just in line with what we're talking about, naturopathic healing, it's necessary, because one thing that I did not really talk about was my healing journey. Yes, I have the benefit of being married to someone who is vegetarian and is an advocate for natural healing, but most people, and I'm saying most people don't have that type of support system. Okay, and when I talk with people, matter of fact, many people have what I call negative support systems, because it's just something about, and again, we're not here for shame or blame. We're here to give straight talk, real talk, so that people can identify with what we're talking about and use this information to help themselves. It's not about blaming your uncle or your friend for not doing you right, or it's not about blaming your dysfunctional family or whatever. It's not about that. It's about healing, but you can't heal if people don't speak the truth, because you'll just be walking around in your little illusionary world wondering why the world seems like it's going crazy around me and I don't know what to do. And that's a result of people not giving you straight talk. So we're not here to shame and blame, but with that support system, for instance, when I told people that I was healing from diabetes, what do you think people do? They immediately start shoving cookies and donuts at you, saying you're not going to make it. It's the same way like when I had stopped smoking cigarettes years ago. I guess it's like 25 years, no, 26 years ago, I stopped smoking cigarettes. When I announced to my friends, I'm done, the reason I'm stopping is I don't ever want a doctor to say to me, you have cancer. Like, I was definitely afraid. So I said, let me be proactive. Let me quit while I'm ahead. They haven't given me a bad report. Now, don't you know that everyone I know who smokes were like, you're not going to make it. Here, just have a cigarette. You know you want one. So what I had to do was get rid of people, places, and things. Okay? And I did that on my own, but I'm clear that many people cannot do things like that on their own. You need assistance. And you can't overtax one person either, because that's not fair to them. So it's like how Dr. Saltpaw was talking about, you know, he'll do counseling. He'll tell you about your diet and your lifestyle. He'll give you exercises. By the way, I still have my package that he gave me. I held on to that tight. And, oh, yes. And I share it with people, and I let them know this might not be your exact prescription, but this was what I needed. Mm-hmm. But just to give them an example of what they get when they work with him. So I share mine with people.
Great.
So, but getting back to what I'm talking about the life coaching is important because you might not have a positive support system. Many, many people don't, and many people are failing for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And as a life coach, I do encourage you to work at your own pace, because the idea is this is not a competition. This is not a race.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about what anybody else is doing. It's your personal journey.
Right.
And the goal is simply success, not the time that it takes to get there.
Great.
So you don't hear that from a lot of people, and that was the impetus. That was the impetus for my doing the trainings and becoming a certified life coach, because I personally know how important it is to have a support system, whether it's with your health, whether it's relationship issues, whether it's career issues, whether it's a spiritual issue, it could be anything. It's important to have a positive support system from someone who does not have a stake in it.
Great.
Okay?
Outstanding, honey. I'd like to ask you, tell the listening audience, how can they get in contact with you if they are interested in your services?
So you can call me. The phone number is 888-449-0413. You can call me. You can leave a voicemail if I'm not available. You may also email me at Dora, 4367 at gmail.com.
Would you repeat that again?
Dora, 4367 at gmail.com.
Great, great. Well, I'm really excited about your new venture, Dora, and the addition to what you're doing, because it's something that's very much needed. And Dr. Saltpaw, needless to say, what you just shared with us just even makes me more excited about having you on the show again and sharing with the listening audience the services that you provide and also the information that you can give to our listening audience and ourselves here at home of how we can maximize our health during the year 2016. Unfortunately, we're at the end of the show.
Oh.
And I'd like to just say that this was actually part one. Would you agree, Dr. Chris?
So far? Yes, absolutely. We got a lot. We have a lot more to talk about. I feel like a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. I mean, some of the areas that we will touch upon is your acupuncture practice, and then there's something that you and your new partners are dealing with, even certain things within a sexual area, like erectile dysfunction issues, stress-reducing treatments that you have incorporated in your practice, and heart and stroke disease. Just a plethora of things that I think are germane to our community in terms of their health issues that we all probably, if not individually, have someone in the family that is at risk in those areas. So I'd like to thank you, Chris, for being with us this morning, and I look forward to perhaps next week at the same time at 9:00 next Sunday morning, that we will have you on board again with part two of Grassroots Holistic Health 2016 Health Initiative.
That's
so
wonderful.
Thanks again.
I'm looking forward to it. Absolutely.
Great, wonderful. Are there any thoughts that you'd like to share before we go up the air?
No, I just had such a wonderful time talking with you, and you know, every time and being on air with you, every time I get a chance to listen to Dora speak and listen to you talk, it's just so much more inspiring. And so now I'm going out to see some patients in my Manhattan office, and I just feel so good. I feel like I got so much to give, and I feel like that's one of the things that's really important when you're going through this. You know, when you're doing your own healing or just with anything, it's just like, you know, having those positive influences. This has been like church service this morning for me. So, you know, I feel so good. And I think that, again, it's really important to have this, you know, have a community mm-hmm. where you can get this from. So
wonderful.
This work has to go on. We have to spread the word about Dr. Saltpaw's practice. And Dr. Saltpaw, if you have flyers, I'd like some so that I can give them to my colleagues. I've been giving out copies of your business card because I ran out of your business card, so I made photocopies of them, and I've been giving
those
out.
I would like to get with you about life coaching because I do think that there's this whole way that I feel like patients need consistent coaching all the time. As a practitioner yourself, you know, You're successful if you have people saying, wow, this person really helped me meet my goal. But a lot of times people don't meet their goal if they kind of, you know, they visit you and they don't see you again.
Yes.
And so, you know, people need coaches. They just do. And so I would like to get that information from you too.
Surely. Absolutely.
Well, again, thank you. And give our regards to your family, your wife and daughter. And we look forward to next week.
Absolutely. And you have a blessed week.
Thank you. You too, my brother. Hey.